What's up, Playlisters? Brian from Playlist Wars here. Just want to let you know that while this show is on hiatus, both Gomez and I have separate shows that are part of the Playlist Wars extended universe, if you will. Gomez has the Sleevey G Show, which you can find at SleeveyGPodcasts.com. And I have a new show entitled My Weekly Mixtape, which you can find over at MyWeeklyMixtape.com. Both shows are also available on all podcast platforms just by searching Sleevey G Show or My Weekly Mixtape. And Playlist Wars will be back soon. Thank you guys so much for your continued support of the show.
This is Playlist Wars.
Welcome to Playlist Wars. I'm part of the dynamic duo of co-hosting this show. My name is Gomez. I have my partner in crime, Brian Colburn. And our special guest is John Pritchard from Well Disguised Podcast. Welcome, gentlemen. How is everyone doing tonight?
What's up? What's up?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to this.
Me as well, man. I think this one's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you just changed your list at the last minute, Brian.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm guilty as charged. I've been moving some songs around and swapping stuff out. I think we hit record, what, like 30 seconds ago? And right before I hit that button, I made another switch. I am having a real hard time with this one.
Always the last minute, man.
No, dude, I start looking at my track list and I'm going, yeah, this song would work better here. This song would work better here. Now I want to hear this one. Then I'll listen to it. And you just go down a rabbit hole with these. It's so much fun preparing because you just rediscover these albums and songs by these bands you haven't necessarily heard in their entirety. And I just love this part of it.
So, Brian, what band are we talking about tonight?
Well, tonight, Gomez, we are talking about England's newest hitmakers, the Rolling Stones. Tonight, each of us have created a 10-song playlist consisting of track 1 through track 10 of our favorite Rolling Stones songs, and we're going to go through them one by one. And after we're done, the listeners can click in our show notes to vote for which one of us got it right. But before we get down to business, John, why don't you start by telling us why you're excited to be talking about the Rolling Stones with us tonight?
Because the Rolling Stones have been one of the best bands, obviously, in the history of the world, and one of the most important bands to me. I kind of hate to say this, but my love affair with the Rolling Stones started on the night of my junior prom. It was not because I was at the prom, but because I had gone with a friend of mine to Discovery Place. You know, every city's got a hands-on kids museum. Mm-hmm. Well, Charlotte, North Carolina is called Discovery Place, and they had just put in an IMAX theater.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. This story would be better if I was in the backseat of a car on prom night playing Wild Horses or whatever. But actually, the Stones had just done the Big Steel Wheels tour, and they had recorded Live at the Max. And that was really kind of my first concert, even though it wasn't really a concert, obviously. But that was my first time, obviously, at a huge screen and great sound system and all that sort of stuff. And it's been a love affair ever since.
Awesome. Awesome. For tonight, I'm actually a little nervous going into this episode. And I'm not normally nervous, but we are talking about a band with a catalog of 30 studio albums. That's just north of 300 songs on their official U.S. releases. Now, I'm not even counting B-sides, non-album tracks, live albums, remixes, studio outtakes, any of that stuff. There's over 300 just studio songs on Rolling Stone studio albums. So the odds of the three of us having a trifecta tonight, choosing the same song, appear to be smaller. But who the hell knows? Because out of those 30 albums, there are some that a lot of people gravitate to. So that might be in our favor for that. Now, alongside of those 30 studio albums, they actually also have 28 greatest hits compilations. So pretty much every time they put out a studio album, you could pretty much expect a greatest hits album afterwards, just the way it timed out. And then they also have 10 live albums, which is one per three studio albums. So a lot of stuff to kind of dive into tonight. So let's just not waste any more time. John, why don't you kick us off with your track one?
All right, guys. Well, my first track is actually not on an album, at least not originally. And I haven't got a lot of history making, you know, mixtapes and that sort of thing. So you may have an advantage over me. So I kind of thought about it as a live experience. And that first song you do want to have as a kind of a war horse, a standard, something iconic. And for that reason, I went with Jumping Jack Flash as my first song.
Ooh, great song.
When you guys have another episode down the line where you do your playlist wars of the top riffs, I hope we're going to hear dun, dun, da, 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 da.
Oh, yeah.
Great song, kind of a fake autobiography for Keith Richards. And I was listening to this in preparation. I was listening to it in my car, and it says it's in mono. And it sounds like it's coming from everywhere. I almost find it hard to believe this is the mono version and wasn't in stereo. Just a tremendous song, and I want to start it off with a big one.
That is truly a big one. Track 3 on my list, actually, John.
Wow.
Jumping Jack Flash. I first heard this song around 86, 87 when I was a youngin', and it was in a movie, of course. But there was a movie in 1986 with Whoopi Goldberg called Jumping Jack Flash.
Yeah.
Oh.
And what was the main theme song? Was from the Rolling Stones' Jumping Jack Flash.
Of course, but that movie.
I don't know. I thought the movie was hilarious. It was 1986. I was young. I didn't know better. But like you said, John, it's the guitar riff on that song. That's what I wrote. Memorable guitar riff on my notes here. And I just felt like this song should have been made in the 80s, but it was in 1968 this album came out.
Well, the fact that it was featured in an 80s movie, where if you think about the sound of music in the 80s, it was a lot of that synthesized drums. And here we have this song from 20 years earlier that's being used in a feature film. It just shows the longevity that the Rolling Stones music has. Because here we are almost 40 years removed from that, and we still talk about the Rolling Stones in the present tense. So that just talks about what a lasting impact their music has. Unfortunately, I am spoiling the trifecta here. It's a fantastic song. I have absolutely nothing against it. It is an iconic riff. My track one is actually another iconic Rolling Stones riff, which they have plenty of them. Let's just be honest here. But I went total cliche to open up my track list, and I chose from 1981's Tattoo You, Start Me Up. It is a cliched opening for a playlist, but I honestly don't care. Cliche or not, it's a great song to start things up, pun intended. In 1981, I was about 4 years old, and this is kind of where I got my memories of the Rolling Stones, my first memories. My cousin had this record, and I remember that iconic album cover, and he played this song. And for a four-year-old, it was just one of those fun rock songs. I heard it all the time on the radio with my parents in the car. And this was my introduction to the Rolling Stones. And it wasn't until years later when I gave up the toy stores at the mall and started going to the record store instead that I really started expanding my musical education. And my parents kind of latched onto that and said, oh, if you're thinking about listening to this, why don't you check this out? And this is when they started maybe around the time of Mixed Emotions, which was the Steel Wheels tour. When I had that cassette in my hand, that's when my father kind of pounced and started taking me backwards into their catalog. So again, Start Me Up was what kind of started me into the Rolling Stones. And I thought it was a great way to kick things off, cliche or not.
Start Me Up is absolutely tremendous. It won't be on my top 10 here, but it is absolutely, like you said, it's cliche, but sometimes cliches are cliches for a reason, right? It's absolutely a killer live tune. Every time. It's such a little perfect rock song.
And it's actually my number one on my track list.
Oh.
So I flip-flopped with both of you guys here with a number one and a number three here.
Oh, wow.
So Start Me Up. It was actually in a movie called The Fan with Robert De Niro and Wesley Snipes.
I actually remember that. You're right.
And Robert De Niro is singing the song in that van of his. And he was a big Stones guy, he said. He said, oh, me, Keith, and Mick, we're always hanging out and everything. That song it was so great for that movie, and it's just perfect. And even his famous line on this one, you make a grown man cry. Mm-hmm. That's what some women do to guys. And that's how I'm going to end that one.
Well, I obviously can't argue with it, Gomez, because I started with that as track one too. So we're moving now on to track two, and John, we're back to you, man.
All right. Well, the second song is always really important, right? You could take a chance with the first one or not, but you really, to hook the listener in, the second one needs to be another one of the big heavy hitters. So that's what I did. And since I started with Jumpin' Jack Flash, the fantasy autobiography of Keith Richards, I thought I'd go to the fantasy autobiography of Mick Jagger for number two. My number two is off Exile on Main Street, arguably the greatest album of all time. It's Tumblin' Dice,
woohoo,
which is such a fantastic song. I absolutely love it. I love that line where Mick says, "I'm the lone crap shooter playing the field every night," kind of the double entendre there, because I don't know how much you guys gamble or if you've ever gambled. But
oh, yeah.
There's a history on that one, John.
Well, then you guys know betting the field is a bet on a craps table. It's not a very good bet, odds speaking, but it is a bet. But of course, I think when Mick was saying he was playing the field every night, he was probably talking about something else. But anyway, absolutely love. You got to have something from Exile on here. This will actually be my only Exile song, but it's number two, Tumbling Dice.
That's a great song. I would have thought playing the field would have been going after the women. But that's me. I would have to give that a hard honorable mentions on that song.
All right. Well, we have three songs in a row now where two of us have at least agreed on it, because Tumbling Dice is my track four. The album itself is unfiltered. It's perfectly imperfect, if that makes sense. It's very raw, and it's the Stones at their most quote-unquote live in the studio. The song kind of takes the blues that the band was rooted in their early years, and kind of adds this like kind of 70s stoner jam band groove to it. It's just absolutely an unbelievable track, which originally was titled Good Time Women. And I'll be honest, I'm really glad they changed the name, because I feel like lyrically, like John had mentioned earlier, the song plays with the double entendres really well and makes it about gambling money, but also about gambling women, which was something that maybe the Stones were known for. Maybe they're not. I'm not going to speculate.
Right.
Who knows?
But no, really, how do I sum up my favorite Rolling Stones album, which is Exile on Main Street, in a single song? And I feel like Tumbling Dice does it. Now, Gomez, it looks like we're up to you for track two, because you said Tumbling Dice didn't make your list.
No. So track two, I kind of went left field a little bit. I went off the Voodoo Lounge album and actually chose Love is Strong.
Oh.
When I first got the Voodoo Lounge, or actually I borrowed the Voodoo Lounge, I never gave it back, but sorry to that person who will remain nameless. And the first song I heard was, of course, Love is Strong, because it's the number one song. And I just remember the way he was singing the song. It was like almost like mysterious, but it was like good classic rock music also. That was my number two.
I'm so glad you picked Love is Strong for at least two different reasons. One, you know, people always rag on the Rolling Stones. They haven't had a great record since Tattoo You. They haven't had a great record since Some Girls. They haven't had a great record since Sticky Fingers, whatever. All right, some of the later albums maybe aren't as strong as those big war horses, but which one of us is as good as we were when we were 25, right?
Mm-hmm.
True.
Every Rolling Stones record over the past 20 or 30 years, it still has worthwhile moments, good songs, and that's certainly one of them. The second reason I'm glad you picked it is because I'm going to have one of those soon, and I kind of thought that might torpedo my chances of winning with like the old Stones heads who might be voting on this. But Gomez, now you're wrapped into it with a modern song too, so we're back neck and neck here.
Yeah, well, I will say this. You guys picked songs from the 90s. I'll make one spoiler alert here. Start Me Up is the newest song on my track list in 1981.
Yeah, see, that's a smart move.
But the thing is, it's not even a strategic one. That I will say. It is just where musically I sit with the Rolling Stones in such an era that trying to deviate from that era in either direction was damn near impossible for me, and I still can't do it. So with that being said, John, your track two was Tumbling Dice. Gomez, yours was Love is Strong. My track two is a song that followed the band's 1967 experiment or misstep, if you want to call it, their Satanic Majesty's Request. The song I chose was a breath of fresh air for Rolling Stones fans after that Sgt. Pepper LSD trip of an album. My track two is the opening song on 1968's Beggar's Banquet, Sympathy for the Devil. This is the song that kicks off what I truly believe is the band's most prolific era, 1968 through 1973. This is a grandiose way to open up a record, and it kind of prove that the Stones had a lot left in the tank as far as creativity goes, because I guarantee that was being questioned after the last album. And this song kind of strayed away from the band's poppier blues-rooted roots from the 60s and kind of took them into uncharted territories. Now, Gomez, I always know you like to pull out lyrics in a song, and Sympathy for the Devil, to me, has one of the most iconic opening lines to a song ever recorded. Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
Yep.
You immediately know what song it is. You don't even have to say the second half. You could start it with, please allow me to introduce myself, and everybody knows what song you're talking about. That's how fantastic those lyrics were for that song. And because I always like to include cover versions where applicable, Guns N' Roses, here's a movie reference, Gomez, 1994 soundtrack to Interview with a Vampire covered it, and it's also on their Greatest Hits album. Again, I don't think they really did much to the original, but if you ever find yourself thinking, I would love to hear what a Rolling Stones song sounds like if it was performed by Guns N' Roses, that's your opportunity.
That's one of my honorable mentions, but I absolutely love that song. It's definitely one of the ones I wrote down that just didn't quite make the cut for me. That is a tremendous tune. This is something we may talk about as we go on, but the idea, and I've even said it before, that Mick Jagger, he's kind of the fancy boys. He has those dance moves that seem a little strange and not as cool as Keith Richards, obviously. But there's some darkness in that guy. There's some real grit and the ability to say some things that other people just simply don't have. This is not nearly the only example, but Sympathy for the Devil is one of those as well. I will just add, since you brought up the Guns N' Roses version, I don't know if you've read Slash's autobiography. He absolutely hates that version that Guns N' Roses did.
Really?
I always liked it. Yeah, I think maybe Axl was taking his guitar parts off of it. He said that's the sound of a band breaking up.
Ooh.
That was really like the last straw for Slash. But okay. I like it too. I think it was a great song.
Yeah, I think that was probably recorded all around the time of that spaghetti incident, which that album's kind of a strange mess for Guns N' Roses. But we'll save that for the GNR episode, definitely. Gomez, Sympathy for the Devil.
It actually made number 7 on my track list. Please allow me to introduce myself. That's the iconic entrance to a song. And the song was in actually 2 movies, but I already talked about The Fan already in 97. But I was kind of surprised. But it was in The Suicide Squad with Will Smith, Jared Leto, and all those guys. And actually, what's kind of funny, Brian, as you know how I like to quote, you took my quote already, but one of the other quotes I liked was, I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment in doubt and pain.
Mm-hmm. He had a way with words on that song. And there's been a lot of lyrics for the Rolling Stones that have caused controversy over the years. But when you even take those out of it, some of the lyrics are really poignant.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them are just fun and some of them are just overtly sexual. But that's what you get with the Rolling Stones. It's kind of a mix of those three things. And I'll just say it like the commercial. Anything less would be uncivilized.
God, I forgot what commercial was. Oh, Right Guard.
Yeah, I think that was it, right? Yeah.
I remember you're going to laugh at me. It was Major League 2 when Charlie Sheen was doing that scene.
You're right.
Upside down.
The fact that it's Major League 2.
Sorry. I am such a movie nerd.
Yeah, and Right Guard isn't even sponsoring us for this episode. So with that being said, John, let's move back to you with your track 3.
Yeah, so we will not have a trifecta because of what you said earlier, Brian. But my number 3 is my favorite Rolling Stones love song. And one of the reasons I particularly like it is because it's a love song that Mick and Keith kind of wrote to each other. It's Mixed Emotions off Steel Wheels from 1989. This platonic love song when the Stones were in a really dark place in the mid 80s, where Mick had gone off and done some solo albums. Keith, who said, never break up your band, he had actually gone out and done a solo album. But the Stones came back together and they came up with this song. And I think the third verse says, you know, Mick singing, let's grab the world by the scruff of the neck and drink it down deeply and love it to death. So button your lip, baby, button your coat. Let's go out dancing. Let's rock and roll. And even that where, you know, Keith talks about sometimes where he would go along to discos with Mick, even though he didn't want to, but he would do it just because he was his brother. That last line, let's go out dancing. Let's rock and roll. That Mick and Keith coming together thing. this is where I feel like I may lose some people, because I think there's a lot of, you know, Stones heads who are going to want, you know, Start Me Up maybe is a little too modern, kind of like Brian said, but I have to have something from that modern era, and Mixed Emotions is my pick.
That's a good pick, actually. I like that. Did not make my track list, but a very good tune. One thing is, John, you got to remember, this is like our greatest hits album. So it, whatever draws to somebody, it might, you know, a crowd might draw it up to your playlist and might love that song. You know what I mean? Who knows? That's what I love about this show.
Right, right.
Yeah. Mixed Emotions, I have to be perfectly honest, is one of the songs that right before we were about to record, I was flip-flopping, and I flip-flopped it with another song. I did have it in the set list and then pulled it out for another song that we'll talk about a little bit later on. But I absolutely love that song. Again, that was how I was getting the cassette of Steel Wheels at the time. And that was when my parents said, oh, you like the Rolling Stones? We got some stuff for you. And that's where I got taken backwards. And from that point, once I went back, I found it hard to go forward because I was just falling in love with all these earlier albums. So it did take a miss for me, but it's a fantastic song. I absolutely love it. And if we did have an honorable mention, that would have been the first one for me, hands down.
Very good.
Brings a tear to my eye, Brian. You're such a poetic man.
If you think I'm poetic, wait till you hear what I'm getting to. Gomez, you had Jumping Jack Flash for your track three.
Yes, I did.
And how's this for poetry? 1973, Goathead Soup. This album had the unique challenge of following up what I personally think is a perfect quadfecta of albums. Beggar's Banquet, Let It Bleed, Sticky Fingers, and the cherry on top, Exile on Main Street. To live up to those four albums was nearly impossible. And yet, the band comes out on the opening track, Dancing with Mr. D, and I feel immediately rose to that challenge. And that's my track three. This song has this rock funk vibe to it that you don't hear on a lot of Stones tunes. That might have been a part of Mick Taylor's influence. It might have been just where the band was headed. It could have been the drugs. Who knows, really? The one thing I will say about that song, though, I love the original album. The 2020 Giles Martin remixes, it's like hearing the album for the first time all over again. The way he made those mixes shine like he did with all the Beatles ones. They've all been really impressive. But if you're going to listen to Goat's Head Soup, I think that's the version you should go to first, because I feel like it's the cleanest. Some of the original vinyls of that were kind of muddy sounding, and you don't really get the full experience like you do with that new mix. So Dancing with Mr. D, I'm not even going to get into the lyrical content of it. I think you could pretty much figure that one out on your own there.
Yeah, that was about 12 years before Guns N' Roses did Mr. Brownstone, I think, but probably about the same thing. Dancing with Mr. D, I do have a song coming up from Goat's Head Soup. It's not that one, but I've always loved that song as well.
Did not make my track list. Very good song. Good point about the funk mix of it, Brian. Makes you wonder if he hung out with George Clinton a little bit.
I don't know. There was just definitely, they had a different vibe going with this album.
Well, it did have a different vibe to it, though.
Awesome. So, John, looks like we are back to you with your track four.
All right. For me, number four is the one that I kept kind of rotating around, moving songs in and out. I knew I kind of wanted to start the way I did. I finally went with Monkey Man off Let It Bleed. This is, to me, is just one of the Stones' most classic songs and a real rocker that grabs you. Mick is admitting that there's a primitiveness to him, and the song has still that real raw sound that mixes with not only the lyrics, but I think the message and image that Mick's trying to put out. You know, he starts out by saying, all my friends are junkies, and then says that's not really true, kind of reflecting the Stones being arrested for drug possession and that sort of stuff back in the 60s. And he also references that famous blues line that I sometimes forget that Led Zeppelin didn't write it. Mick says, I could use a lemon squeezer.
Yes.
You know, the whole squeeze the lemon, let the juice run down my leg, that thing. And then that lyric also, well, I hope we're not too messianic or a trifle too satanic. Mixing both of those images, the Messiah and Satan, and other bands, I don't think we're doing that sort of thing. I don't think bands would be that risky for a long time and the Stones were doing it in the 60s. So I'm going with Monkey Man.
Could have been during the drug era, you know, for this song. There's a good chance, man, like you said. But overall, great tune, but it would not make my tracks.
Yeah, I represent Let It Bleed Hard on my list, and I know that's a tease. So I could not find a place for another song from that album, because I think besides Exile on Main Street, Let It Bleed's a number two for me. So it was very hard to try to pick and choose which songs to best sum up these albums, as well as make a kind of a complete playlist. So love the tune, just didn't make my list. Now my track four is Tumbling Dice. So Gomez, you have a track four left.
Actually, like you guys, my track number four is from the Let It Bleed album. You Can't Always Get What You Want.
Great tune.
One of those tunes that you listen to and you hear again the iconic first words of the song. I saw her today at the reception, a glass of wine in her hand. And that's another thing, just listening to the song and the harmony entrance to the song, you know what I mean? It makes you, I don't know, something about it. And the acoustic guitar as it's playing, and it just makes you feel like something on that song. And the song was in a movie again. I refer to the movies a lot of people. No, I don't pick these songs because they're movies, but sometimes I remember what movie it's from and the scene. And this song was in the movie 21, which is a gambling movie, like you said, John.
Oh, yeah, with Kevin Spacey. Mm.
Yes, Kevin Spacey is
the
teacher.
That was a good one. I remember.
Great movie. And it was in that scene when they're all winning the money. And, you know, it says you can't always get what you want. You can get some things, but not everything. And sometimes it could cost you. That would be my track number four, ladies and gentlemen.
There's a French horn on that, right?
I believe there is, yes.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's not a lot of great rock songs with French horn in it, but this one definitely works. It's kind of like the bagpipes from It's a Long Way to the Top if you want to rock and roll on AC/DC.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's rare, but it really works. These types of songs, with at least one exception, which we'll talk about in just a minute, the slower stuff doesn't last with me as much, I think, as some of the more upbeat stuff, but it's absolutely a great song. And I certainly went through a 3 or 4 week phase with it in my youth where I played it all the time. It's a great tune.
But did not make your list?
No.
Okay. That did make mine.
All right.
It's track seven. And look, this is 1969. This is Let It Bleed. This is the Rolling Stones having their Hey Jude-esque anthem, if you'll call it that. You have your full choir. You've got a full string section. Like you said, a French horn. I think they threw seven kitchen sinks in there. But all of the excess of the song works and works really, really well. The thing I love about the song is the groove, man, the groove of this song. It has it in droves, because it starts off with this choir. So you're getting this kind of one vibe right at the beginning. Then it strips down to an acoustic guitar, and it's a ballad-esque opening. It feels like it's just going to be a slow, quiet song. But once those drums kick in, it becomes an instantly head-bobbable type song, where it's not rocking, but it's not really a slow dance anymore. It's not a slow ballad anymore. It's got this groove to it that keeps your head moving. And then at the end of the song, when it goes double time, now you're rocking out at the end of the tune. So it's really this opus to close an album. And finally, because I like to include cover songs, in the 90s, Rusted Root recorded a fantastic cover featuring Hot Tuna. And that's on their self-titled album. That one I really, really enjoy, because I kind of love that Rusted Root style, and it works so very well with this tune. John, it looks like we're back to you with track five.
All right. I know you like Exile on Main Street. My favorite Stones album is probably Sticky Fingers.
All right.
And I'm going there for the first time on my list, and I think the last time, actually. But I'm going to also kind of pick up the same vibe that we're on and go with the last song on the record, Moonlight Mile.
Ooh.
You know, the Stones have a lot of great slow songs, a lot of great ballads, love songs, that sort of thing. This is my favorite of all of those. And you, maybe you guys are going to mention some of them, so I won't spoil by throwing any out now. But I just remember for a time in my life, I was driving 4 or 5 hours to see my now wife to be able to spend weekends with her. And I would almost always find that one on the radio because it's evocative of the way that I felt going down there. Now, I did not have a head full of snow, either literally or metaphorically, as Mick talks about, but it's really a beautiful, pretty song of the pretty stone songs. Moonlight Mile is my favorite, and that's my number 5.
It's a great song. Did not make my track list, but again, they do have a ton of good, like you said, love songs, and I agree with you on that.
Unfortunately, did not make my list either, but I actually have another song from Sticky Fingers that is my track 5, and I think it's kind of the, Gomez, if you don't mind if I kind of stay on this Sticky Fingers topic here.
Well, because what's kind of funny, my number 5 is from Sticky Fingers too.
Oh, well, now that you said that then, sir, the floor is yours.
No. Why don't you go first? Age before beauty.
Okay, fine. I am older, so I'll take it. My track 5, I went with Bitch.
Same 5.
Yeah. It's the B-side to the band's controversial Brown Sugar, but the song was so awesome, it gained airplay on AOR anyway. And look, this song, the horn section really, really shines. I mean, I love horns in rock music. What can I say? This is terrible, but I don't care. What can I say? I enjoy horny songs. What can I say? No, but I mean, think about it. Rocks Off at the beginning of Exile has that horn section. It's very memorable, but I feel like it's really memorable. It's the best way the Stones and the horns work together was on this song. And one last thing I'll say is, because of the cover versions, in the 90s, I had a CD called No Alternative, which was a AIDS benefit CD compilation. And the Goo Goo Dolls with Lance Diamond covered this on that. And that was actually the first time I heard that. I'm like, why does this sound familiar? My father started laughing and said, because it's on that Rolling Stones album, Sticky Fingers. And then again, he broke out that album. And there you go. It's another kind of tie back to how these cover songs sometimes have brought me back to the band or vice versa.
Hey, Brian, did you eat a horse meat pie?
No.
Sorry, I couldn't resist that line. I just
can't say I have.
That's one of those that made my list that could have been where Monkey Man was. So it's in my, if we were doing 11 to 20, I think Bitch would be in there. Absolutely wonderful tune. I've read one time, and like I said, this is not an original thought, that someone has made the supposition that Keith Richards missed not having horns in the band for so long, that his guitar is kind of tuned to be kind of brassy. And so a lot of times, even if there's not those horns, and I guess as they got more successful, they were able to start bringing that stuff in. But that sound is almost always in what you hear with the Stones, and it's one of the reasons I like them so much.
So we have a Sticky Fingers trifecta for track 5, but all different songs.
Yes.
Which just goes to show you how great Sticky Fingers is of an album. But
actually, one of my favorite songs on that album is Can't You Hear Me Knocking?
Oh, yeah.
It's just a great tune. It's like trying to get your attention on something. Where I first heard it was actually kind of funny. It was in the movie, in 95 movie, Casino.
You're right.
With Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro again. And it's just nostalgic with that movie.
A fantastic song. Did not make my list, but bands all over the place jump at the chance to cover this song. Mo, a jam band that I've seen many, many a times, has covered this song for years. They do a great version of it. It's just one of those iconic, grimy 70s rock riffs. And there's so many of them sprinkled throughout this era of the Stones. I mean, you really can't go wrong when I talk about this prolific era of 68 to 73. And this is just another example of it.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot else to add, but when you talk about jam bands covering it, this is 2.5 minutes of a killer riff, killer rock song. And then the Stones kind of show off their jammy side, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like the last 2.5, 3 minutes of it, Mick's gone. And it's just the Stones kind of going back and forth with the horn section too. And it's not really a song that's in the Stones character. I guess it's a little bit out of what they normally do, but it's another one of those that would have been in my 11 to 20 range.
Awesome. Awesome. So now we're at the point where if this was a mix cassette, you'd flip it over, or a vinyl LP, you'd flip it over. The CD just keeps on rolling. But at this point, I just want to say we're halfway through not a single trifecta. So that 30 albums, 300 plus songs could be the trifecta killer here. Let's find out. We got another half to go. John, track six, kick it off with you, man.
All right. So we're just coming off, like you say, we're flipping it over. We've had that beautiful, haunting, touching song, Moonlight Mile, off my list. I think this is an original thought. I've worried today that maybe I have subconsciously copied this, but I do think this is an original thought. You could have the biggest gangster rappers in a room, and you could mix them on the other side with the Norwegian death metal, black metal, satanic metal crowd. And none of them would ever have written a lyric as evil as Johnny Cash when he wrote, "I once shot a man in Reno just to watch him die." And so how am I bringing this back in? Mick Jagger has got some of that same evil in him. My number six is the last song off Goat's Head Soup. It's called Star Star.
Ooh.
It is sexist as it can be. It's misogynistic, but it's almost like you got to forgive it a little bit because, you know, there's so such venom behind it coming from Mick on this song. And, you know, if you've ever listened to it, you know, the only time it's ever called Star Star is on the actual title. And, you know, I always try to remember that my parents may be listening someday, but it's Star Effer, Star Effer. Throughout the actual song. And you guys could say it if you want to. But I mean, this song, even for, I guess it came out in 73, was bringing forth celebrities into the music. And it's got two in particular, well, three really, but that the lines, "Yeah, Ally McGraw got mad with you for giving head to Steve McQueen," as he's saying this song, which is about groupies. And Ally McGraw was married to Steve McQueen at that time, you know, famous action star.
Mm-hmm.
Steve McQueen was like, "Yeah, this is good. I'm cool with this," and was totally okay with it. John Wayne, on the other hand, did not like being included in the song, with the lyric just a couple lines after that. "Yeah, I'll make bets that you're going to get John Wayne before he dies." So Mick just bringing in these celebrities. And so John Wayne is kind of mumbled in there in that song. But there's so much venom and vigor in Star Star. I think that's a good way to get side two going. So that's my pick.
That is definitely the Stones' most controversial song. I mean, I'm sure arguments could be made for songs like Brown Sugar not aging well.
Sure.
But Star Star is really probably their most controversial tune. And the song kind of carries controversy beyond the Stones, because if I'm correct, Joan Jett covered that song for a cassette version of her album, it's called, and Walmart banned it.
What?
Because of that song. So again, it's just one of those songs that kind of carries this, and it's a great tune, absolutely fantastic tune, but it caused an issue in the 70s, and it caused that issue with Joan Jett in the 80s. It definitely, the lyrics speak volumes, let's just say.
Yeah, it's not for the cancel culture, that's for sure.
No. Did not make my list, but it's a great tune.
It didn't make my list either on that one.
Now, Gomez, we're up to you for track six.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. I did not realize it was my turn.
All right, so you're using nothing for track six. We'll move on.
No, track six. It's coming out of the Voodoo Lounge CD back in 94 again. And I picked Moon Is Up. Just one of those songs I was listening to, and I could just sit there and actually enjoy that song and just think about things, you know what I mean? And go through the movies again. It was actually one of my favorite football movies. No, it was not Varsity Blues, Brian.
Okay. I immediately was going to go there.
No, because it was 1 year later. It was The Replacement with Keanu Reeves.
We're not a movie podcast, no. But here's my hot take. I like The Replacements better than Varsity Blues. That's it for the movie podcast, Barnes.
Yes, that's it. And I remember it's in that scene with Keanu, I think, was going after the cheerleader at the bar, I think. And that's where I heard the song. And it just brings up some good things. You know what I mean?
That one didn't make my list. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I didn't go past 81. And when I was spending time listening through the albums to kind of come up with my 10, I scanned the 90s stuff, but knew where I was heading with mine. So I really don't have much to say about the song other than it's 90s Rolling Stones. I in my brain, I have that sound in my head, and the songs get a little interchangeable, but that's because I kind of wasn't as into that era as I was the 70s stuff.
I will say, though, I actually did enjoy that Voodoo Lounge CD. Again, you know, growing up in the 90s, freshman year of high school, and hearing that album, I thought it was one of their better albums in the 90s.
Well, and that's the thing. That's an album that you resonated with at the time growing up, whereas I kind of was ignoring it at that point because I was so busy going backwards in their catalog that I really didn't give it its just due. But it's not a bad song at all, and I hope it doesn't come across like I'm saying it is. It's just not my era of the Stones.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Gomez. To be honest with you, I don't really remember it that well. It's not one I reviewed in the past couple of weeks since we talked about doing this. But like I said, I am kind of a apologist for Steel Wheels and Voodoo Lounge and Bridges to Babylon and even A Bigger Bang. I'm an apologist for those records, so I'm glad you found another spot to get one of those songs in.
I mean, this band has done everything for all the years, and they just try to prove everybody they can still rock out and still have great tunes.
Definitely, definitely. So now we have Star Star and Moon is up for track 6, and now I am up. And I'm going back to 1969 with this one. Shocker there. But this one's actually not on an album. It was a single only. Although there's an alternate version that appears on Let It Bleed. My parents had this on 45. So this was one of those songs that I talked about when I mentioned, hey, I like Start Me Up. They said, hey, well, we have some other Rolling Stones albums you might like. And if you have a fever, they told me that the only prescription that they could give me was more cowbell. So when you look to the Stones, here's where you'll get that fix. Honky Tonk Women.
Okay.
The 45 single was the only way you can get it before it appeared on compilation albums. It is such a fun song. It is laid back, kind of country-esque. Not as country-esque as Country Honk, which is what's the version that appears on Let It Bleed. But personally, I like this version better. And if memory serves me correctly, Country Honk was the first way it was recorded. And this was about the time that Mick Taylor was starting to get intertwined into the band. And he started laying down this nasty riff. And they said, wait a minute. And they started kind of formulating Honky Tonk Women out of Country Honk. And it's such a fantastic tune. It's one of those iconic, if there ever were to be a Playlist Wars episode on cowbell tunes, that's one of them. And because we like, I always like to throw in cover versions when they're good. This one's got a bunch that are really good. Ike and Tina Turner did a version of it on their Come Together album, which was great. Obviously, Joe Cocker off the legendary Mad Dogs and Englishmen album. You have Elton John, who did it live on his 171170 album. Travis Tritt, when I lived in North Carolina, when I was going to school down there, my buddy gave me a copy of a CD called Stone Country, which was a bunch of country artists doing Rolling Stones tunes. So Travis Tritt did this, and he did a great job. And that was where I really started to become a country music fan, was when I lived down in North Carolina. So that one resonated with me. And then finally, Billy Joel on the 2000 Years the Millennium concert did a fantastic live version as well. So, I mean, that song has just crossed genres and decades, and it's just a fantastic tune. There's not much else that I could say about it.
The Stones have too many great songs.
Yeah.
I'm mad at myself because I thought to say at the beginning when I knew we would get, before we even started, I thought that I wanted to say was, the Stones have so many songs. Not only would it not surprise me if we don't have any of the trifectas, but that you guys are going to mention a Stone Cold classic that I just completely forgot about. And I mean, I spent some time in this. I've thought about it late in bed at night. I've been listening to Stones music. I completely forgot about Honky Tonk Women. Man, that's the Rolling Stones for you.
So John, while we're talking, you're right back up with your track 7.
Well, I know I've been going off the beaten path a little bit here, and I've had a mini theme going too. Moonlight Mile was the last song off Sticky Fingers. Star Star is the last song off Goat's Head Soup. I'm going to It's Only Rock and Roll Now. And again, a little off the beaten path, I'm going with Fingerprint File.
Wow.
This is a controversial song. I know a lot of Stones people aren't going to love Fingerprint File, but it's the Stones doing funk. And I like it a lot of times when rock bands do funk or disco. I think a lot of times they do it great. Bringing that dance and that dirty dance energy into songs does a lot for them. You know, it's a proof again, you don't have to end an album on a clunker. When you do Playlist Wars, the best last songs on an album sometime in a few years from now, you know, maybe you'll come back around to Fingerprint File, maybe not. I'm sure Keith Richards hated this song, but it's, you know, it's all about that surveillance era and Mick, you know, doing the cocaine sniffles and worrying about being recorded and being watched and the girl with the FBI and all that sort of paranoia that certainly goes around the drug scene. I really love Fingerprint File. It's my favorite song off that album, and it's number 7 for me.
It's definitely one of the best songs on that album. That was when Mick Taylor was kind of seeing his way out of the band at the time, so much so that he didn't even play on a lot of that album. But I can't argue with the funk part because I have Dancing with Mr. D as my track 3. So I get that vibe and that element. Although I feel like Fingerprint File is kind of more akin to like Sly and the Family Stone.
Yeah, maybe so.
It's kind of hard to put a finger on it, but I definitely catch that vibe from it. Great song. But again, just too damn many to choose from, man.
Right. Way too many. Way too many. But I still say they hung out with George Clinton, man. That funk they did do with that song too. With Dancing Mr. D and this song. It's unreal. And that being said, it did not make my list, sir.
Okay, okay. Well, John, because Gomez had Sympathy for the Devil as his track 7 and I had You Can't Always Get What You Want, you get to go back to back now. We're up to you for track 8. Still no trifectas.
Wow. That's a first.
I think we still got a shot, but I would be surprised if it's this one. My track 8, and I want to go with heavy hitters from here on out, is Miss You off of Some Girls. It's another kind of keeping with that theme. There's a little disco and dance flavor to Miss You. But Keith and Ron Wood are just killing it on this, going back and forth. And this is as good a time as any. I could have done it for Monkey Man for sure, but I'm sounding like such an idiot saying this at 45 years old, to give a shout out to Charlie Watts, the drummer. But to me, Charlie Watts is like the most underrated musician in rock and roll. There's a reason why he usually gets the loudest ovation when they're announced at the end of a concert. Mick has said this song is not about a specific girl. It's more about just a general sense of longing. But this is just a really, really good song. And I love it. And that's why it's my number 8.
Truly good song. Makes me wonder. The Rolling Stones came from England. Now, listening to some of the songs and some of the lyrics, it feels like they hung out in New York City a lot. Because in that song, one of the lines is, "I've been walking Central Park singing after dark." It just makes you feel like they just loved hanging out in New York a lot.
Well, for sure. You know, there's Shattered, which also talks about Manhattan and Uptown and that sort of thing. Definitely the whole Studio 54 vibe is part of where Mick comes from. Mm-hmm. But then there's also like the Muscle Shoals thing too, part of the sound.
Right.
I mean,
right.
The Rolling Stones are from England and they're like America's greatest band.
It's amazing that, yeah, that's exactly right. They cross so many genres. This is actually one of the songs that I was wrestling with and it ended up getting slighted. So I can't say enough good things about this song. It's fun. It's different. And it still has that element of rock, even with the disco-esque vibe to the beat that Charlie's laying down in it. Keith wasn't ready to let go of that. And he still brought the rock to the song, even though the melody and everything else is very rooted in pop and disco. I think he was able to rein it in to still make it a rock song. This isn't the Harlem Shuffle, let's just say.
The Harlem Shuffle.
Right, well said, well said.
Oh my God, I can't believe you brought that one up. When you hear Harlem Shuffle, you hear the new version these days, that's why.
Of course, of course. But and again, Harlem Shuffle, another ode to New York, being they've been talking about this with these other songs here. So Gomez, track 8.
Track 8, for me, came out of the Voodoo Lounge again. You Got Me Rocking.
Jeez.
I told you, I love the album. No, and let me tell you, track 9, track 10, we're going to go back in a day.
Okay, you got me shocked.
I told you, I was out of left field a little bit with the Rolling Stones, because, listen, you're going 30 albums of these guys, and I really wanted to go with the old goodie hits that everyone loves, but I wanted to change mine up a little bit, and I wanted to be different. And that song is You Got Me Rocking. And he just talks about all these odd jobs and makes you wonder if he was saying, because all these people who do all these jobs, that it's like an ode to them or not. And I just love that song. And again, it was featured in a movie.
Damn it. I was waiting to pounce on that. I thought you were wrapping up.
No, it was, again, my favorite movie with Keanu Reeves, The Replacements movie. It was in that song.
Yep. I was just waiting. I was like, please God, finish up so I could pounce on him.
Do you really think you're ever going to pounce on me on movies?
Because you had mentioned The Replacements for the other song.
I know.
So I thought that this one could have slipped through the cracks.
No. Listen, I am a movie nerd. This is what I love about our podcast.
Are you sure that Gene Hackman didn't just have Voodoo Lounge playing in the background while they were shooting the movie? That's a lot of songs to feature from one album in a soundtrack.
It was actually only two.
Yeah, I'm just saying that they're both from the same album. That's, you don't see that very often unless it's actually recorded for said movie. That's interesting.
You're going to be surprised with my last two when I give you the list of those two.
All right. Well, honestly, it's my favorite song on Voodoo Lounge, but didn't make my list because of things said earlier.
Yeah, I've thrown Gomez a couple lifelines twice on Voodoo Lounge. I don't have anything else for the third one. But I like the song. Don't get me wrong. I like the song, but it's not going to be on my list.
I went outside the box a little.
All right. Well, I'm right in the center of the box because I'm closing this thing out like I would close out a concert. And I'm going way back towards the beginning, not the beginning. 1966's Aftermath, the U.S. edition. Because confusingly enough, the song was not featured on the original UK edition of the album, and it's Paint It Black. Brian Jones' sitar, instantly recognizable. I honestly can't think of a ton of rock songs that use sitar, except for, here we go again, Guns N' Roses at the opening of Get in the Ring. But it's not an instrument you hear throughout a ton of rock music.
Definitely not.
And here it's instantly recognizable. It's iconic. It's probably the most recognizable use of sitar in a rock song. And once again, got some fantastic covers over the decades. Eric Burdon and Ward did a crazy version on their Winds of Change album. U2 did it as a B-side in the 90s to the Who's Gonna Ride Your Wild Horses single. And Johnny Lang here, Gomez, got a movie reference for you. 1999, it was featured on the soundtrack to For Love of the Game, and Johnny Lang covered it for that soundtrack.
I don't know how that one, now that slipped through the cracks on me, and I'm shocked because that's one of my favorite sports movies with Kevin Costner and Kelly Preston, and I'm very disappointed in myself.
Well, it's a cover song though, so you were looking Rolling Stones up. This is a switch, but, and I also just want to say, for the love of God, I hate that movie just based on the fact that it's called For Love of the Game. My grammar correction wants to kick in and fix it every time.
That's your St. Mary's High School ADD kicking in.
No, but honestly, three great covers of that song.
Awesome.
Yeah, Painted Black is a wonderful tune, and it's really probably of those early Stone songs. I guess I didn't go back any earlier, I don't think, than Let It Bleed for my list, but Painted Black is awesome. It's dark. It's just that opening into the world the Stones would dwell in for the next 40 years or so. It's a good song.
It actually was my track 9, Brian.
All right.
And I'll tell you that, like you said, the most iconic entrance, you hear that song and you automatically know what song that is. And it's also could be for a good scary movie.
And let me guess, you're going to tell me which one it was.
Actually, I'm going to actually tell you two movies, actually. First of all, it was in the 1999 movie Stare of Echoes movie.
Never saw that.
It was a Kevin Bacon movie. It was actually a pretty scary movie. And I just forgot about it because it's been so long since I've seen it. And actually, we're going to take it back to 87 on this one. 1987, Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Wasn't that during the credits?
Yes, it was. And I know it wasn't during the movie. It wasn't, but it was in the final scene of the credits.
No, I completely forgot because I'm too busy listening to music to remember what movies I've seen, let alone go back. And that was like, you just like opened up a cobweb in my head where I was like, holy shit, I actually remember that.
So that's my number nine.
So now, Gomez, you just kind of all you did there was jump ahead of John with your number nine. So we'll go back to John for his, and we'll see if we're going to be able to squeak out a trifecta here before this thing's said and done.
I just want to say at the outset, I have seen movies before. Apparently not to the extent that you guys have, but I have seen some. But I'm going to go ahead and say Goodfellas for my number nine.
1990, great movie.
Just to get that out there. My number nine is Give Me Shelter off of Let It Bleed.
Woo!
You know, this obviously is very much of the 60s, but, you know, the conventional wisdom is that Black Sabbath kind of put an end to all the hippie peace and love stuff from the 60s with their dark, evil sound. Give Me Shelter almost did it in a more literal sense for everything that happened in Altamont and that sort of thing. The song is obviously not so much about Vietnam, but more observant of the chaos at the time with the protests and the social movements and that sort of thing. But Give Me Shelter is just brilliant. It's the Stones at their very best. And it probably should put dirt on the idea where people say, maybe backhanded compliment, the Stones are the world's best garage band, the world's greatest garage band. They may be the world's greatest garage band, but garage bands don't do Give Me Shelter.
No,
they don't.
They can't do that. So, and one of the best things about Give Me Shelter, it's my second favorite Stone song. If you go on YouTube, it's one of those tracks where every bit of it has been isolated. So the other day I was working out and I was just working out to Charlie Watts on the percussion part. And you can hear Mary Clayton's voice cracking on the, you know, the rape, murder, you know, it's only a kiss away or only a shot away, whatever. You can, all those parts are isolated and you can just hear those moments. And for whatever reason, the Stones are being good about it and not forcing people to take it down, I guess. Give Me Shelter is awesome. One of the best rock songs ever. And that's my number nine.
It's a great song. Actually, that's how I ended my track list, number 10. Give Me Shelter. John, great one with Goodfellas, but I actually could top you with three more on that one.
I'm sure you could.
Why am I? I'm not even shocked at this.
I'm not even. Well, first of all, Goodfellas was one of the movies, iconic movies that was in it, but also it was in Casino in 95 and also The Departed in 2006.
Ah, okay.
A Scorsese trifecta.
Yes, I have one more. We're going to take it back to 1987. And Elizabeth Shue was the main character of this movie. Adventures of Babysitting.
That is a stretch, but oh my God, I think I saw that once in 1987.
That is the greatest babysitting movie you'll ever see, man.
Wrong. Wrong, wrong.
Oh, which one now?
Don't tell mom the babysitter's dead, but we're not a movies podcast. Stop.
Yes. Okay. But it was in that. It's, but again, it's just that song that it fits in almost any kind of movie, as you could see.
Definitely. Song's fantastic and fantastic enough that I close my playlist with it as well. Thus, finally giving us a trifecta tonight.
Awesome.
We all agree on Give Me Shelter, which is awesome. 1969, Let It Bleed. Such an amazing album. Can we just take a minute and sit here in awe of the fact of this album's opening and closing tracks?
Uh-huh.
Between Give Me Shelter and You Can't Always Get What You Want, two amazing bookends to an album. And this is a 7-word chorus, and it packs a 1,000-word punch. War, children, it's just a shot away. And the way it's sung, can we just talk about Mary Clayton for a minute here? Can you imagine Give Me Shelter without her vocals in it?
No.
It's a fantastic song. But without her, the heft and the levity that this song gives, I think, would be lost. I think she is the glue that holds this massive cornerstone of the Stones catalog together.
Yeah, there's so much passion that comes from her. Have y'all heard the isolated track?
I've heard hers. I have not heard anything else.
It gives me chills every time.
There's no auto-tune on that. That's real. Like, that's what I love about it. It's raw and emotional, and it just elevates the song. So much so that any of the covers that I'm going to throw out for it, while they're good, will never touch the original. Grand Funk Railroad did it on their Caught in the Act album, and Stone Sour, who's one of the modern heavy rock bands that I like,
yes,
covered it with Lizzie Hale of Hailstorm on their Straight Outta Burbank EP. Now, I have said countless times that I think Lizzie Hale is one of the great female rock singers of the modern era. And I'm sorry, but as much as I love her voice, Mary Clayton's is just leagues ahead of it. And that's not saying anything bad about Lizzie Hale at all. I love her voice, but Mary Clayton's vocals are untouchable and should remain that way.
Fully agree.
Definitely, definitely. And I'm glad to see we did get one trifecta out of this, because over 300 songs, the odds were not in our favor.
No, it definitely wasn't. I was kind of shocked that we actually all picked Gimme Shelter.
Yeah, and now Gomez, you're closed out here, but we have two more songs to go.
Yep.
So my track 9 is, again, from a U.S. edition of an album. So I have to state that, because if I just say it's from 1965's Out of Our Heads, I'm lying if you're listening in the U.K. It's one of the most iconic guitar riffs of all time. It's the song that, when I first started learning bass, it was one of the first 3 songs I learned. It's one of the first songs a lot of guitarists learn, and it's because the riff is so damn iconic, it's the first thing that you want to try to play when you get a guitar. I can't get no satisfaction. It's a masterpiece. It's a song that gets the joint up and bouncing. The song is 55 years old and still feels modern and fresh. It's kind of the Stones, I want to use the word, punkiest song. And the Stones, obviously, in 1965 weren't a punk band, but if you listen to what they were doing there, I could see where punk music could kind of derive some of their influences from it, because it's a really driving tune. And I feel punk roots in that song. This one actually has 2 really good covers of it in 2 distinctly unique areas. Devo did a new wave version, which was actually a hit for them, on their Are We Not Men? We Are Devo album. And then one of the best vocalists of all time, male or female, sang this on her Aretha Arrives album, obviously the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin's version.
I will just say that I feel dirty that I don't have satisfaction in my top 10. Because, I mean, it's one of the all-time greats, and I agree with you 100%. If I go see the Stones live, the last song I want them to play, I think, is Satisfaction. That's what I want to go home to. It's one of the greatest of all time. I had Jumpin' Jack Flash as my number 1. That kind of took the place for that, you know, the very old Stones music for me. But obviously Satisfaction was another one of those in my deep list of honorable mentions.
So, John, that being said, Gomez and my playlists are officially closed. So why don't you take us home with your track 10?
All right. Well, we all had Gimme Shelter. You guys had You Can't Always Get What You Want. I had Monkey Man, Country Honk, kind of half represented off Let It Bleed too, when you did Honky Tonk Women. I'm going to close this out with another off Let It Bleed, Midnight Rambler.
Ooh, good one.
One of my top 5 favorite songs of all time, period. I said Give Me Shelter put into the notion that, you know, the Stones are just a garage band. If that's true of Give Me Shelter, what do you make of the epic that is Midnight Rambler? You know, it's Mick Jagger's fantasy that's based on the Boston Strangler, but actually the Midnight Rambler's a little worse. you know, he's a...
I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh in that note, John. I apologize.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
It's just one of those things you just don't realize. What were they thinking when they wrote these songs?
Yeah. But others have called it a blues opera. And it really does have, not that I'm an opera expert, don't get me wrong, but it does have those changes in tempo and cadence and it kind of moves around. It almost has sections. And then where at the very end, where Mick lays into the mouth harp on his harmonica and is bringing in the dump, dump, da, 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 dump, 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 you know, and it's almost like proto metal there at the end where the band is just kind of laying into it at the last verse. It's absolutely brilliant. It's also historically been their showcase live to kind of jam out, to take an already, you know, 6-minute, 7-minute long song and sometimes bring it out to 9 and 10, kind of indulge their Deep Purple side or what have you. But I think Midnight Rambler is brilliant. I mean, it's obviously, again, it's that ugly, dark place that so much of the Stones comes from in its lyrical content. But as a song, I think it's brilliant. And that's the last song for my mixtape.
You literally took the words out of my mouth, because as you were talking, that was the word I was going to say to describe it in one word. Brilliant. It simply is. That being said, John, now we're going to kind of go through our playlists, track 1 through 10. So that way the listeners can kind of hear your playlist in its entirety. And then we'll go through ours. And then at that point, the listeners can click the show notes and vote on which one of the three playlists tonight they feel was the best. John, your track list.
I'm starting us off with Jumpin' Jack Flash, segueing into Tumblin' Dice, moving over then to Mixed Emotions, followed by Monkey Man. Then we're going to slow it down a little bit with Moonlight Mile. Then we're going to raunch it up with Star Star. Fingerprint Files, my number 7. Then Miss You. And we're bringing it home off the Let It Bleed record with Give Me Shelter at number 9 and Midnight Rambler at number 10.
My track 1 was Start Me Up. Track 2, Love Is Strong. Track 3, Jumping Jack Flash. Track 4, You Can't Always Get What You Want. Track 5, Can't You Hear Me Knocking. Track 6, Moon Is Up. Track 7, Sympathy for the Devil. Track 8, You Got Me Rockin'. Track 9, Paint It Black. And track 10, Gimme Shelter.
And my playlist started with track 1, Start Me Up, Sympathy for the Devil, Dancing with Mr. D, Tumbling Dice, Bitch, Honky Tonk Women, You Can't Always Get What You Want, Paint It Black, I Can't Get No Satisfaction, and closed it off with Gimme Shelter. Three fantastic playlists coming from all different eras of the Stones. We were, out of the 300 plus songs to choose from, able to come up with one trifecta in Gimme Shelter. John, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Why don't you tell people about Well Disguised and where they can find it?
Yeah, so Well Disguised is my coronavirus project that started last spring, and it's a rock podcast I have as my subtitle, Rock Snobbery About Lowbrow Music, which is, you know, you guys have got probably a little bit wider range of songs. I'm kind of stick to the rock thing. But, you know, my idea for Well Disguised is my podcast. Each episode I try to have around half an hour, try to be like an article that you might have read in your favorite rock magazine from the past. Chuck Klosterman hopefully meets, I don't know, a little Joe Rogan, something like that. But anyway, that's what I'm trying to do on it. If you've enjoyed listening to me talk about the Rolling Stone songs, I'd appreciate it if you give me a listen wherever you get your podcast. I'm also on Twitter at @well_disguised. And gentlemen, this was so much fun. I love talking to Rolling Stones with you. I'm really honored and thankful that you had me on.
I really appreciate you coming on too. We actually had a lot of fun tonight with this show. And, you know, Brian, anything else you need to add?
Vote for me.
Yeah, listen, you don't have a t-shirt that says vote for Pedro, okay? I'm sorry, Brian.
Hey, you said, did I have anything to add? Nobody else took the opportunity to, ask for votes. So I'll shill a little bit. I don't, you know. This is three fantastic playlists. And I'll be honest, I love all three of them. And I'm looking forward to, when the show's over, sitting down and kind of listening to the songs in the vibe that you guys, to kind of hear your thoughts as how you came up with your stuff. So I loved it. I had a great time.
Awesome. Well, don't vote for Brian. Vote for either me or John. We would like to see Brian come in last. But on that note, I want to thank you guys for being on the show. I want to thank the listeners too. Now be sure to listen to us for our next show. Thank you guys. See you soon.
You can find Playlist Wars on Facebook and Twitter at Playlist Wars, on Instagram at Playlist Wars Podcast, on email at playlistwars@gmail.com, or via voicemail at 201-644-6498. That's 201-644-6498. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave a 5-star review and be sure to tell a friend or multiple friends about the show. Until next time, thanks for listening.